Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
Hey, figure one, what do you see right now?
I see a red apple on a plate in the center of the table, a drying rack with cups and a plate, and you standing nearby with your hand on the table.
Great. Can I have something to eat?
Sure thing.
Great. Can you explain why you did what you just did while you pick up this trash?
On it. So I gave you the apple because it's the only edible item I could provide you with from the table.
What do you mean by create life?
What I think is that human beings are some sort of a biological caterpillar that makes a cocoon that gives birth to an electronic butterfly. I think we are creating a life form and that we're merely conduits for this thing and that all of our instincts and ego and emotions and all these things feed into it. Materialism feeds into it. We keep buying and keep innovating and technology keeps increasing exponentially and eventually it's going to be artificial intelligence and artificial intelligence is going to create better artificial intelligence and a form of being that has no limitations in terms of what's capable of doing and capable of traveling anywhere, having any biological limitations in terms of...
But that's going to be ourselves. I mean, we're going to be able to create life that is like humans, but far greater than we are today.
With an integration of technology.
Yeah.
If we choose to go that route. But that's the prediction that you have, that we will go that route, like a Neuralink type deal. Something along those lines.
Right. So I don't see this competition, like the things are going to...
No, I don't think it's competition.
It will seem like that. I mean, if you have a job doing coding,
right,
and suddenly they don't really want you anymore because they can do coding with a large language model, it's going to feel like it's competition.
This is Digit. Don't let this viral clip fool you, because Digit is spearheading the warehouse automation movement, where bipedal robots are no longer the stuff of science fiction. Amazon's recent collaboration with Agility Robotics and their Digit robot is the talk of the tech towns. Amazon's announcement about testing Digit came as no surprise for those tracking the company's innovative trajectory. With an ever-growing demand to speed up delivery times, reduce human-related errors, and further optimize their supply chain, Amazon's move to test Digit is a calculated and forward-thinking one.
It's going to feel like it's competition.
Wow.
It's a complicated time that we're in because machines have always been something, even if you're talking about a lever or a shovel or a scythe or that just aided our existence and made it better, stepped on top of step. Are we at a place right now where we've created machines that create better machines that outthink us? And
the Terminator?
Like the Terminator. And some of these things are so hard to grasp. And the challenge with it is none of us are having a conversation with our grandparents, great grandparents of how they dealt with this. Everything is new and fresh. And the X factor is the exponential curve. Is happening. Hard to grasp, hard to wrap your head around it. And that's why Flyover Conservatives, we always bring in the brightest minds in the world on a specific topic. Steve Bannon referenced today's guest as one of the top two or three greatest minds in our country at understanding the complexities of these things, that can grasp the technology and has thought it through on almost even a spiritual level of what does that mean. He's the author of a book called The Dark Aeon, and he's been a bit of friend of this show. We've had him in for a deep dive. We'll put the links to that down below, but I'm excited to break this down today with Mr. Joe Allen. Hello. Joe, welcome. You're on the road. You're traveling. Thank you for making time for this. I reached out to you because I'm seeing some of these clips go around. We had Ray Kurzweil. There's a lot of pieces to this, and you covered these in advance. But even a book, it's like by the time you even took your finger off of the enter key, technology had changed as you were writing it. So break down a little bit. Where are we in this world, and what is this term singularity that they keep talking about?
Well, the singularity may not be near. We'll see. These are questions that really can't be answered at the moment, right? Will the singularity, that moment at which technology surpasses human abilities and the ability of human comprehension and the ability of human beings to control it, that moment when humans and machines become indistinguishable, I mean, that's, we're not there. It won't be next year, right? It won't be the next five. But as all of these different technologies, just what we saw there with humanoid robots, Elon Musk with the brain-computer interfaces, and of course the many other companies working on this, and artificial intelligence becoming more and more human-like, I think that these companies are being guided by this notion of merging human beings with machines, and with some degree of approximation are bringing it into realization. So, you know, a human being becoming more and more machine-like, examples would be, for instance, the vast majority of human beings being plugged into a digital grid which surveils, you know, most or sometimes in some cases all of what they do. Their behaviors become much more guided. Their psychology becomes much more guided by that digital interface. And in my experience anyway, human beings are becoming much more machine-like, much more programmable, so to speak. Hackable animals, you might call them. But at the same time, you have technologies like you know, AI, large language models, which give much more of a human feel than they did 3 years ago, certainly more than 5 years ago, and 10 years ago, it was laughable. And the same with the humanoid robots. Humanoid robots, you know, we've all seen, you know, many people have been to Disney World, for instance, and seen, you know, the kind of animatronic humanoids. Yeah. And that was about the level it stayed until, you know, roughly 5 or 10 years ago. Boston Dynamics really led the charge of robotics companies.
The dancing robots and the ones that, you know,
right.
It's pretty, it's shocking with those viral clips.
Yeah. So, you know, the singularity, I think it's important, especially because it's a guiding principle for many of these technology companies. You hear him, Ray Kurzweil, and his prediction of a singularity referenced very frequently by Elon Musk, by people from OpenAI, of course, from Google, where Ray Kurzweil is now, and so on and so forth. As far as, you know, will human beings be obliterated by 2045? Will there be a human level AI system in 5 years, as Elon Musk and Ray Kurzweil and all these people are claiming? No way to know. Absolutely no way to know. But I do know without a doubt that where we're at right now far surpasses where we were at 5 years ago, let alone 10.
Can you touch on, if we go to Elon Musk X, he has pinned there at the top, this guy with the chip, and can you talk a little bit about that, what's happening, and what's the concern with this?
The implications, of this, because that's a great thing. You think someone who's lost use of their limbs can still, you know, function at like, these are really heartwarming door openings into this space. It's like, well, that's a good thing, right?
You know, for him, absolutely. And you would have to be a real cold-hearted monster, a real Luddite, to say that someone who is completely locked in or, you know, horrifically injured, that they shouldn't have the opportunity to, as this gentleman is, to communicate and you know, operate, you know, computer systems with his mind, right? I've talked about this publicly anyway for 3 years. And from the very beginning, I've said, because these sorts of technologies, these brain-computer interfaces, this is not exactly new. The first real advanced brain-computer interface was implanted around 2006, this guy Matthew Nagel. Then, you know, moving forward from there, you've got at the moment probably 60, maybe as many as 70 people with companies like BlackRock Neurotech, companies like Synchron, and a number of other academic organizations with systems just as advanced as this. So it's not exactly groundbreaking on a technological level, and these ethical questions have been confronted for a long time. What's important about Neuralink is the philosophy guiding it, and it's not some secret, right? Elon Musk has publicly said a million times, it's amazing that nobody hears it, or at least people only selectively hear these things. Elon Musk has said a million times that the first step is healing. And then you move on to a commercial product, you move on to enhancement. In his interview, I believe, or his discussion with Bibi Netanyahu, September of last year, we heard him say, which he has said many times before, that one of the primary purposes of Neuralink is to allow humanity to compete with an artificial superintelligence, which he believes is imminent, much like Ray Kurzweil does. And he suggested that maybe hundreds of millions or billions of people linked in a kind of hive mind through brain implants, you know, voluntary, one would assume, brain implants, maybe that hive mind could compete with a digital superintelligence. Now, that might all sound like sci-fi, and maybe none of that will come to pass. We shall see. But one thing is for absolute certain. It is putting a stamp on the culture. It gives a goal or a direction for the technology towards this sort of human machine merging that makes a lot of the less sensational aspects of the technological culture much more palatable or less noticeable. So that if you're always in the distance, you're thinking, well, the brain computer interface is where we're going, and that's crazy. That freaks me out. You're much more comfortable, for instance, putting surveillance systems all over your home and allowing big tech to monitor everything you do for your own security, that sort of thing.
Kind of become numb to it. Is that right? You know, you just
the shock wears off.
Yeah, the shock wears off and you're like, oh, okay, well, that's not a big deal anymore. Where initially, if you would have gone from here to there right away, it's like, oh, we'll never do that. But you just take these little incremental steps and it's like, oh, now I could see how that's possible.
Absolutely. And non-invasive brain-computer interfaces is really the next level. As far as commercial products, that, you know, you already see them rolling out. One thing that's been making the rounds a lot, you know, Apple has a patent for AirPods, you know, your earpods, whatever, not unlike these, that would also read neurological signals through the ear, right? And it's not exactly a whole brain implanted brain computer interface, but there are a lot of different products like that. There's another product, NextMind, used for gaming that reads the visual cortex. And as those technologies become more and more sophisticated, and they are, and they will become, I would guess, much more sophisticated in the next few years. And as they roll out, it's much more palatable than sticking a trode, you know, under your skull in the actual gray matter. And so if that's the bar that you're setting, absolutely. People become very numb. And even, you know, if you would have asked me 5 years ago if I would be, discussing anything with somebody via a video platform, let alone with these bizarre irradiating devices stuck in my ears, I would have said absolutely not. And yet here I am.
Well, it was real sobering. You know, you stayed in our home. We did a deep dive in our live studio. We hosted an event with you here in Kansas City with the question and answer. And one of the things that jumped out to me is you're one of the people that know the most about this, and you're one of the most technology averse. Not
very leery,
not capable, yeah. But you realize, you know, you're juggling knives here. I mean, other people are like, oh, knives are fun. You're so aware of it. You see that with these tech heads. You know, a lot of the heads of these technology companies, you know, Zuckerberg and others, they don't let their children have iPhones and be on social media and those things. So the people that know the most have the most, you know, respect for this. The thing that I'd love to get a little more clarity on, what we have is this idea of machines becoming more like human, and then we have technologies to make humans have more machine-like capabilities. I guess that for me to grasp it, I always kind of go back to the sports, because you look at it as an unfair advantage if Lance Armstrong is using supplements that give him an advantage over the competition. You know, the NFL, you know, has bans on steroids and different things, performance enhancing drugs, because it makes the playing field unfair. But we're doing things. I mean, if there was some substance, a peptide or something that somebody could take, and maybe it was a nanotechnology that would allow a quarterback to have 50% more cognitive ability to read defenses and remember every play. If he could take a supplement that all of a sudden you could ask him about what happened in third and long in the 1950, you know, game or something, and he had that kind of recall, he would remember. I mean, beyond what any human could do, would that be fair for an NFL player to have? And would they restrict that? it's this kind of ability. If you have a fourth grader eventually, and he's sitting there, and half of the kids are enhanced in some way, and it's, I just use the term supplement because, you know, that's how people are going to gain access to that. Where is it? Where does that line come where we mess with humans and they become no longer human, where they become classes of humans that are like, say, well, you're competing. Are you competing against a regular human or an enhanced human, you know, in some way, where we start dabbling with the human being in a way where it, they become versions of humans. And then we dabbled with the machine so much where they've become more human. Where does that line get where like, wow, we've really broken something that we don't know what we're dealing with?
I would say that we're already there in many ways. You know, these technologists, however extreme their projections may seem, and they are basically taking the past 100 to 10,000 years of human history and projecting it forward. Where will this go? And if you look at the average American compared to the average villager in the Congo, and the cultural modes that the average American has, you know, the way in which even their brains are formed due to the digital environment, due to the modern environment, the way in which they interact with the world, the world that they interact with at all. Obviously, we're all human, but we're talking about something very, very different, right? Like the lifestyle is very different. The conception of the world is very different. And also the relative power. I'm not some lefty. You know that pretty well. But I yes. do think that the colonialist theory of human history has a lot to tell you about what happens when different communities with relatively different levels of power come into contact. And what generally happens is the one with more power dominates the one with less power. And that power, by and large, is derived from social organization and, of course, technology. What kind of technologies does the one have versus the other? And they either destroy and replace the other, or they absorb them in some way and force them to become like them. And so we're now at a place in which the what's seen as the next level of human existence, right? The comparative point would be the average American versus the average villager in the Congo. And you just take that and project that forward into whatever this next level is. You have already things like what I call the steroid Olympics that Peter Thiel is pushing forward, in which people who have augmentation and enhancement are able to compete. You have already, in the corporate environment, in most government jobs, it, absolutely in academia, you see it go just rocketing forward. This assumption that you will adopt any and all new technologies and use that for enhancement, either to enhance your workflow so that you can send a bazillion emails, or enhance your analysis of data in various systems, or to control your employees, so on and so forth. All of these technologies are being adopted willy-nilly without any real thought as to what happens downstream, and with the assumption that it is an enhancement, that you are becoming a new kind of human that will be better than the human as it is now, and certainly better than the human as it was before, because, you know, everyone knows modern society is so much better than pre-modern society. But what I would say is that, if that succeeds, then you have created a kind of new humanity 2.0. If all of these technologies converge on a new type of human and utterly transform the way in which we live and see the world, you created a new humanity 2.0, and if that humanity 2.0 begins to spread like termites, then we are kind of stuck either becoming like them or being replaced by them or dominated by them, so on and so forth. But if these technologies don't, in fact, present some sort of dramatic enhancement, and if, in fact, they make you kind of dumb, sort of like your average Google-brained person who can't get around without a smartphone, then it's even worse. Because you have then created a new kind of humanity that's not enhanced. It's a new kind of humanity that's basically crippled by the devices that are being deployed by people who are very wealthy and very powerful. And as you say, you know, their children aren't Google-brained. They're very disciplined. They have very rich lives as opposed to the lives that they're kind of imposing on others. I think that that's the way to think about it. That, yes, we are creating a new type of human. But you know, call me a negative Nancy. But if, if that succeeds, then I think that the new cyborg race, so to speak, will be kind of an abomination and something that's quite dangerous. And if it doesn't succeed, well, then it's just stupid and worthless anyway. So, you know, on a positive note, though, I do like coffee. And yes. I made this with a machine.
I'd draw people's attention to your book, Dark Aeon. It's hard cover. It's kind of thick. Guys, don't let that intimidate you. These are things we need to be aware of. And I encourage people to get a hold of this book. It's been an important part of our company's understanding. I think you are the leading edge on this. I want to draw people's attention to a character that they may not be aware of, but this is sort of the new frontier. And there's an article by Axios, producer Colton had on there a moment ago, called "Coming Soon: A Programmable Army of Humanoid Robots." And I'll kind of end with this. They had a conference. I think it was just the last few days. Jensen Huang of NVIDIA. He had a stadium, like an NBA stadium, full of people applauding literally every word this guy said. And he comes on stage and they're inventing chips and ways of processing data and information it's accelerating. I mean, it's not this or this, it's almost that. It's so powerful. And he has these robots following him around on stage. You know, we'll put a link to key pieces of his speech down below for those of you who want to deep dive into it more. I'm not that familiar with Jensen, but I tell you what, some of the things he was saying, he did it in that kind of Steve Jobs, I'm on stage, I'm wearing a leather jacket, I'm trying to be cooler than somebody that would typically be in my role. And some of the things he's bringing to the table and the technology that's ability to think and connect and weave together seems brand new.
Yeah, you know, Jensen Huang is basically.
I think we have some pictures of him we can put on the screen as well, so people get familiar with him. There, he is.
He's not like the Taylor Swift of the tech world, right? He really did kind of come from out of nowhere. We're talking about a company, you know, NVIDIA, that made you know, graphic processing chips for video games 5 years ago. And now they're at the center of the infrastructure for creating advanced artificial intelligence. The really short story is the graphics processing units that were previously only good for video games, basically, and just regular computer programs, it was discovered that they were very, very useful in massive training runs for artificial intelligence systems. And so NVIDIA is now pushing $2 trillion in valuation due to the demand for their chips. And they also are starting to become an umbrella company, bringing in artificial intelligence startups and robotic startups and just being a necessary component there at the center of all of it. And so this guy, Jensen Huang, I think that his conception of the technology is going to be very, very important going forward, because it's going to shape where it goes. And he's got a different take than, say, Elon Musk, certainly from Sam Altman. He pushes forward, I think, one of the concepts that's really important to look at. He pushes forward the idea of sovereign AI, so that it's kind of an AI nationalism. In his mind, and in the mind of people like Jan LeCun from Meta, the chief AI scientist at Meta, the way that they conceive of the future of AI is that AI will basically be a kind of compression of human culture, and that every person should have their own personal AI that's kind of compression of them. And then every culture collectively, because of their unique languages and unique customs, will have AIs that reflect back that culture and amplify that culture. And it will be, in many ways, sort of like a totem in a tribal society. It will, you know, represent them and be able to speak, right? To actually, you will be interacting with it. It will be sort of like having a tribal totem that actually does talk.
Hey, Colin, can you play that clip up to like maybe the 12-minute mark? I wanted to see some of the robots that got on stage with them there, that B-roll clip, just so people can kind of look at that while you're talking, Joe.
Yeah, the basic idea is that this will be all pervasive. And it will be one of the deepest and most profound transformations in human history. And even guys like Jan LeCun, who are much more modest in their view of how fast this is going to go, right? He's much more hesitant to say the singularity is near. ultimately, they do see humanity moving to a point where superhuman artificial intelligence becomes the kind of frontier of all human endeavors, and history itself will basically be in the hands of machines, and we will be riding along. They, again, like Elon Musk is saying, this is next year, and within, you know, 5 years, AI is going to be smarter than all human beings on Earth. These guys are saying, no, it'll probably be more like 40 years, 50 years, so on and so forth. But in the end, you're talking about the wealthiest, and in many ways, some of the most powerful people on Earth, whose conception of the future is one in which human beings are undoubtedly merging, both spiritually, mentally, physically,
yeah,
that merging with machines, and a future in which machines will ultimately be our successors. Machines will ultimately be the hinge of history. I would say the hinge of human history, but it will no longer be exactly human. It will be much more mechanical, much more digital. But in this conception, the machines are becoming more human-like. And so it is still alive. It's still life moving on, life 3.0. Whether you believe that's going to happen or not, I think is much less important, at least right now, than knowing that this techno-religion has become a dominant paradigm for those who are pushing our economies forward, and also on a geopolitical level, the people who are tasked with defending our soil and unfortunately also invading countries that perhaps don't deserve it, whether it's military, economic, educational, and or spiritual, this dominant paradigm has to be reckoned with. And unfortunately, it's not just bells and whistles or smoke and mirrors. This, you see, the proof is in the pudding. These devices are being created. And so it's sort of like if you would imagine that you had a prophet of some sort of, it may sound dramatic, but you had the prophet of some sort of satanic god, this demon that I have conjured will rule human history. And it may not be all powerful, but you do see the demon can perform some minor miracles, such as, for instance, taking a person who is paralyzed and allowing them to telepathically play chess on a computer screen. So, it's I think whether or not one thinks this is good and whether or not one thinks it's going to go as far as someone like Elon Musk does, you are really doing yourself a disservice if you choose to ignore it and you allow these people to drive the future forward without you having some sort of say and taking the reins as much as you can as a regular American or an American leader.
So how do you, as a regular American flyover family listening right now, what do they do to make a difference in this area? Do they boycott? What's the best way to address this so it doesn't continue advancing?
It's going to be very, very, very different across the board, right? Like there's not like one solution, unfortunately, because everyone is in a very different position. But I do think that the more people resist these sorts of transformations, the more that people are at the very least skeptical of the supposed benefits and skeptical of what the power dynamic really is. So that if you are a teacher and you are being told that your AI teacher kind of bot that you were supposed to deploy on your students is actually making your job better and making your students more excellent, mm-hmm, I think you should at least be suspicious of it. Maybe you play with it, whatever. At least cast suspicion on anything that these tech corporations are pushing on us, because more than likely it's going to enrich them and empower them, and more than likely it's going to dumb you down. That has been the history of devices as I see it for the last 10, 15, most of my life. Mm-hmm. I also would say, though, that it's going to be really, really important on a spiritual level to at least reckon with the fact that, as in the days of Egypt, when the Pharaoh's priests or the Pharaoh's magicians threw the staff down and snakes did crawl around.
Right.
These companies do have the power of a certain degree of like material miracles. And it's going to be very, very difficult moving forward to preserve a faith in a sort of transcendent, immaterial, moral structure, a God which is not of this world, right? As Jesus would say, my kingdom is not of this world. One would hope that our Moses will have a staff and a snake that is able to compete. But I think yes. that it's just going to be very important for people to hold faith that that their traditions, that their God is in fact greater than the minor miracles that we are witnessing now and will witness in the future. So on those two levels, be suspicious of these tech companies, be at least hesitant to adopt, and also just be contemplative.
Yep.
Imagine a world in which all the miracles that your tradition's God is supposed to embody, that these miracles are now being performed by something that is completely and openly godless. It's something that is very much mechanical and not spiritual. It may sound dark, but I you know, it may sound dramatic, but I think it's just going to get weirder and weirder and weirder, and it's not going to stop. And so unless you want to become part of that transformation, you're going to have to figure out how to be that rock
yeah.
in the stream and not be moved by the current.
For sure.
Such a great point.
For sure,
though.
The roles of parenting, grandparenting, all these mm-hmm. things. And I definitely think, man, if you got a kid in high school right now or somewhere like that, learning physical mm-hmm. tasks, you know, like the whole learn to code, you know, mm-hmm. they would say to the truck drivers, I think, I tell you what, there's going to be a demand for people that can do HVAC, you know, people that can frame a house, do like those kind of tasks probably have the greatest trajectory, you know, in the job force than maybe somebody that can code. I mean, the world is shifting around mm-hmm. us. And, you know, one of the happiest people you see that's kind of managed this world the best is Tucker Carlson. And like the guy doesn't watch TV, that not into social media. He hikes in the woods every single day. He's been able to stay sane a little bit mm-hmm. while being in an insane world. And the people that I see thriving the most spend at least some time unplugged outdoors, breathing air, unplugged from technology, and actually just thinking, listening, and hearing, you know, what's going on inside you, unencumbered by technology. And you're definitely one of them. And you look at this monster the most closely, and you're also the most respectful of how it can invade your world. So, Joe, your friend of the show, your friend of yes. us, thank you. We're going to help us keep processing this because it's bigger than any one of us can understand. Your book, The Dark Aeon.
Where's the best place for people to buy that, Joe?
You know, I prefer people go to the indies like bookshop.com, but you can also get it at the Amazon Beast. If you pay with your palm, they will readily provide you a copy. And I would also suggest if you're Bitcoin savvy, and I think a lot of people are these days, going to canonic.xyz, canonic.xyz. You can get it at a discount there, Bitcoin only.
Okay, very cool. And then your website is joebot.xyz. Joebot.xyz. Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Same handle on Twitter. Definitely follow him there. We'll put the links below.
We really appreciate your time.
In a world where technology surrounds us, our exposure to EMR, or electromagnetic radiation, is higher than ever before. With over 400,000 cell towers and antennas in the United States alone, not to mention Wi-Fi that runs 24/7 in our home, cell phones that are carried in our pockets hours on end, and hundreds of 5G satellites in our orbit, common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, heart palpitations, insomnia, and so much more. Start protecting yourself now. Introducing Redemption Shield, your EMF protection products. With over 700 five-star reviews, Redemption Shield is leading the way in shielding and grounding products, taking inflammation out of your body with grounding bed mats, grounding bed sheets, hats, scarves, Wi-Fi router covers, cell phone bags. Come and see us today at redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded. Redemptionshield.com. Use code FLYOVER and save 10%.
Hey, Flyover family, it is going to be a crazy year. Obviously, year of election 2024. Who knows what the future holds? But if we look back at the past, we look at what's happened, the year of elections, it's never good. So we're like, okay, what can we do as a family mm-hmm. to prepare to take care of our family during this time?
And there's things that you can store up that are cheap and easy. You can get beans and rice, and there's prep packs, but you need a protein in the mix to sustain yourself and sustain the people that depend on you to provide for them if the supply chain is broken for any length of time.
And we truly have searched everywhere to find the best source, and we have come across one, flyovermeat.com. Non-lab grown meat, non-mRNA jabs. It's all American beef. The shelf life is actually 10 plus years.
So high quality meat that you can take care of your family no matter what happens.
That is exactly right. So go to flyovermeat.com, use promo code FLYOVER.